podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don Neely view system, Diogis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Welcome to the Anfield Index Under Pressure podcast. It's done. The season's over. And to celebrate it being over and all this collaborative hard stats work finally coming to an end. Well, no, it never ends. It never ends. I've got the A team with me, Mr. Dan Rhodes. How you doing? Editor of AnfieldIndex.com. I'm going to interview you properly because we'll get complaints otherwise. How you doing, Rhodesy?
Relieved, I'm relieved. That's a key word for this podcast. It was just a sense of relief.
Relief. Taylor. We have Mr. Dan Kennett. I won't call him Darth today.
Evening, Cax.
How you doing, mate? You okay?
Yeah, relieved. Very busy day. Relieved. It's been chock-a-block here.
Relieved as well?
Yeah, I wasn't worried at all about the Borough game, I have to say. There seem to be loads of people stressing about it, but I just didn't think anything other than a convincing win was on the card. So I was quite relaxed about that, to be honest.
I'm with you. I was very relaxed as well until just before kickoff, which is when I got the name. But all day
I was relaxed
totally
before
fine.
The game. It was after 44 minutes I was thinking,
And we have...
Should have been 1-0 down.
We should have, maybe. Well, you never know. Miggs would have saved the pen. Anyway, we also have Mr. Brundish. How are you doing, Si?
He's boss.
You okay?
Good. Of course. We're two games into a new season. I told you it was a new season before West Ham. Happy times.
Yes, you did. We'll come back to you for more reasoning on that later. But okay, guys, I think a lot of people just want to know exactly what we feel in terms of qualifying. We'll do that at the end. But let's talk about this game first and foremost, and the performance, the goals and stuff. We'll come to the on-ball stuff. We'll try and mix the on-ball stats in with some of those points if we can. So, Rhodesy, you were there?
I was. It was great. So
you mentioned the first 44 minutes. Talk about that to me first, then.
Well, I thought Middlesbrough's 6-3-1 or 6-4-0, depending on what formation they were in, was just exactly what we've struggled against all season. I was having flashbacks, and then Lovren collapses himself all over an attacker when his attacker's clean through, and I'm just thinking, this isn't our day. What's going on here? I didn't think we created that much. I thought there were a few. They were blocking a lot of our passes and accepting them. So yeah, it was frustrated, and then just a huge sense of relief when Ronaldo. And once we were 1-0 up, I thought that was it, because I didn't think they'd have any chance then.
No, you could tell the pressure was off at that point. Let's talk that penalty decision. We might as well while we're here. Darth, I said I wasn't going to call you, but I'm just used to it now. Penalty for you?
Yep.
Oh, wow. I think we're going to have a full... You guys are all going to say it was. I didn't think it was, but I thought it was too light touch. I didn't think it was too much of a, you know, touch for it to be one, but I suppose. You guys, Dan and Si, both think it was a penalty too?
Stonewall and Red.
Wow. Si?
Although they've stopped giving reds, haven't they, if it's a penalty? Have they? Isn't there some kind of...
They don't do a double whammy.
No, it's a stupid rule. Like, you've got to kick the ball out every time somebody cheating bastard goes down and tries to waste time. The opposition have to kick the ball out and give it back, don't they? It's the same.
Another stupid
rule. It's not a rule. it's just become part of the culture. Yeah, that's definitely it was. Do you know what? It was so much of a red card and penalty. I was literally cheering for Lovren that he was willing to take one in such a way for the team. And then when I got home, saw the replay, I was like, fucking hell, it was just bad defending. He was just being Lovren again. And I really thought he dragged him down. It was definitely a penalty, definitely sending off.
Yeah, he just got the wrong side, didn't he? Basically,
poor defending, wasn't it? He made that step. He always does that one thing where he makes that step
out. That and a nip it. In front, and no one's covered him. Oh shit!
And that step always puts him two steps behind the striker in the end, because it's that one that puts him out of position. He did it a couple of times. He did it in the first. He did it straight after the goal in the second half, I think. So we scored the second, and then they were still showing replays, and all of a sudden, Miggs had to make a save. So, yeah, it was, again, Lovren stepping out, and they just played it in behind. Oh, God, it was all over. It wasn't a very good performance, but we're being very negative about Lovren right at the start of this pod. Nothing changes. But let's go into I thought the biggest thing in that first 44 minutes was the tension. You could feel the tension. I won't mention infrangibles. It was something that you can't mention, intangibles. I just thought it was just like they were making... The Burnley game away, the bad decision. Si, let's talk to you, because I remember talking to you about this. We were just making, I thought, loads of bad decisions, loads of rush shots. Instead of looking up, playing another player in, there was players, there's three of you in a line, but instead we're taking a long shot and it's blocked or right at the keeper. There was just so much of that in the first 44 minutes.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I was perfectly comfortable. I even tweeted at 43 minutes. There's plenty of time. I thought we were spreading the pitch really well. I thought we were probing from all areas of the pitch. If anything, probably Phil took one or two shots more than he should have, but it's Phil, he does that. But it might have been by design to open up other spaces. I thought we were getting into their box, and I don't think they were comfortable. I just thought it was inevitable. It was coming. There were a couple of occasions when we should have had a pass across the box where we didn't quite, we were just making not quite the perfect decision, but I don't think we were behaving like numbskulls, which we have done like in previous games, like Burnley or whatever. I thought we were doing fine. We were just probing.
Okay.
Yeah, I was similar, actually. I thought Middlesbrough were having to work pretty hard, actually, to keep the shape. It wasn't like the Southampton game where we didn't really push them at all and they could just sit there. Because they did that. I thought Borough ended up doing the kind of David Moyes thing where the wide forwards ended up as an auxiliary fullback. So was it Bamford and basically they were like doubling up so Bamford was playing as a second right back. So it was like really from one of them not to track a run not to track somebody, and then some space was going to open up.
Maybe Stuart Downing, Darth.
Downing was left. Yeah, of course he was.
How can we forget Downing?
How could you forget Downing?
I know.
Down after your relationship with him and his staff.
we'll cover that in the summer.
Just to clarify, right? My relationship with Stuart Downing was very much on saying that he was not shit.
Yeah,
everybody else was saying he's fucking shit, and I was basically saying no, he's not shit. He's okay. He's adequate. That was my argument on Downing, and I got to be this kind of Downing was my love child or something. At that point. God,
he was playing left back yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was as shit as he was when he was with us, or adequate maybe, whatever you want to call it.
I thought it was, we were working him quite hard, so it was only going to take one slip and we would capitalise.
I love it how you two were just really zen and calm. I felt a complete opposite. It's so strange. The guy I was with as well, he was the same as you two.
Quite the goal though, Dan, that I thought, Rhodesy, I thought it was I was actually livid at the start of the move because I thought Wijnaldum was going backwards or sideways or whatever. But in the end, how it turns out. And you know what really pissed me off? It was six passes from when Matip wins the ball back from a press. so I couldn't count it as a goal, as a press that led to a goal, because I have a rule that it's five. It's got to be within five, and I was counting it like five times just to make sure. Shit, it's six. Because I really wanted it to happen, but you know, I'm really weird like that. But yeah, it was six, so it didn't count. But
what a goal!
It was such a beautiful goal, like
lovely movement. Lallana drags Ben slightly away, and then Firmino's just strength and touch, just one the touch. Strength on the ball, and then the deftness of the touch. Ginny like drags it back just slightly behind him. Perfect.
It was brilliant on ball, but you know, we there's been always so much talk about how little Sturridge moves and how he's too immobile to play in the system, and he doesn't do this off the ball and he doesn't do that off the ball. Watch that goal. Watch the goal from the wide angle. Sturridge makes them drop 10 yards. By dropping in behind, he pops back out again. He makes them drop 10 yards, which gave Bobby the space, which allowed us to get into the box. He did it again on the third goal too. And then he's completely free at the far post, ready to throttle Van Alden for shooting near post. Because we'd already
I saw that. He was ready. He was going to shoot it.
I'm on for a sweaty. And yeah. He hammered it, and we'd done it earlier in the game. I think Bobby had taken a near post shot, hadn't he, when he should have probably put it across the goal for it. Again, Sturridge was there, completely unmarked back post. But what a finish!
What a finish! It was the touch in the box, the touch in the box just to line it up. Oh wow, really good, really really good. And he's a big game player. Darth, this guy turns up when you need it.
Ginny,
yeah,
yeah.
That's not strictly true.
Well, yeah. I thought it was a really good finish. And I thought, well, because most of the time, the textbook would say you go across the keeper from that position. But, you know, he basically beat the keeper with power before he
could. It was Guzan, for God's sake. He was
He
was making the ones that were just at him look like Hollywood pass saves.
Yeah, but. I mean, let's be honest, right? Any keeper worth his salt would expect to have his near post covered from. But you know, he did leather it.
It was gone past him so fast.
It was it was only the power that really beat it. I think because if he hadn't hit it so true, then it would have been a routine save. I mean, Brundish, I'm not alone in thinking that the textbook would say go across the goalie from that angle. Am I?
No, you absolutely should have hit it across the goal.
Yeah.
100%. If he hadn't done, he'd have, like everybody on the pitch, would have beaten him to death with his own sweaty foot. With how open the Vinaldo was, completely unmarked. But the thing is that when stuff is so coached, that absolutely is the coaching philosophy there. But. Particularly with English players, where the players are so coached into doing the same thing, so it's kind of easy to counteract. Occasionally, brilliance means you didn't do what was coached, and you still have the ability to pull it off, and that's why it's brilliant.
Yeah. So just on that one, because the power, because we always plug Sportify on this show. Well, Sportify's savability takes into account all the stuff that happens after the shot, like the placement within the frame and the goal, the power. Any movement on the ball, that kind of stuff. And Ginny's goal only had a 26% chance of being saved. I think that's a reflection of how hard he did hit it.
Yeah. 15th is our 15th best shot this season.
Is it really?
Yeah, 15.
Wow.
Wow. Wow. That's mad.
Shot on target, though, sorry. 15th best shot on target.
Yeah, but I presume we're going to rank the shots on target higher than the shots off target anyway.
Of course.
Well, This is actually a very live analytical debate, actually, Si. There's a lot of thing about there just saying that really good shots that just graze the post or narrowly with the keeper nowhere and all those. Okay. Yeah, it's yeah. You'd think so.
So I'm going with Suarez. Suarez against Arsenal is the greatest shot of all time.
Yeah.
Oh, the one that hit the bar?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Just beating Jan Molby against Norwich in 1988.
The only way those kind of shots get into Sportify's model is if the keeper tips it onto the post or the bar.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if they're just straight onto the bar, then it's cast as a miss. So.
Yep, that's how Opta would do it as well when they were doing this.
While we're talking Sportify, Miggs made a really good save.
The one after the Coutinho goal, yeah?
Yeah, it was of one of their Borough players I'd never heard of before.
Forshaw, Adam Forshaw. Yeah. 44% chance of being saved.
Yeah, so that is the 25th best, 25th hardest shot of the season to save. Which is 8th best save of the season.
For Mingley.
And no one talked about it.
Pretty mad. That is pretty mad.
That's quite a big deal. That's quite the big deal. I said on Twitter yesterday that I think he has become, I think he's actually the reason we finished fourth. Because without him, we've grossly overperformed against XG for the last 12 games. And I think he is the factor. I think he is greatly...
Give us the numbers for that, Sai. The what you're talking about in terms of XG. Give us the numbers.
So just talk last six, right? Because these are the ones that people talk about because we've got five clean sheets in the last six. But in the last six games, XG says that we should have conceded five goals, basically, ostensibly. And we've only conceded two. That's quite a big deal. By XG, 9.75, four, and we actually scored 10. So we're pretty much on target, but we've been kind of lucky. And I'm pretty sure it's down to Mignolet. And it holds up over the last, since Spurs game as well. We're outperforming XG since the Spurs game. Before that, we were massively underperforming XG. I think we were 14 goals below or something like that over the course of the first 24 games.
Okay, very interesting.
So since the 28th of January, which was that Tottenham? Was that Chelsea?
No.
Chelsea. We've actually overperformed expected goals against 1.11. So we always say that if you're above one, it's the ratio. Remember, it's the ratio of goals conceded to expected goals conceded. If you're over one, it's an overperformance. If you're under one, it's a if you're over one, it's an overperformance. If you're under one, it's an underperformance. So yeah, 1.11 since the 28th of January. That's pretty good.
But that's 2.83 in the last six games we've overperformed.
I'm just so I'm looking since the 22nd of March. Our expected goal ratio is 1.29, which is even higher. So our expected goals conceded per match is 0.96, and the actual goals conceded per match is 0.75. That's quite significant.
Yeah,
as Si was saying.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I think you can say that Mignolet is a huge part of that.
Yeah, his punching was great yesterday as well. And his, you know, I thought he made those. I think it was two or three punches that were vital at times under pressure as well. And he you know managed to do it. So fair play to Mignolet.
96-yard box, which is weird.
What's that? Say that again. He did what?
He punched the ball clear from inside his own 6-yard box,
yes.
Which I'm not sure I've ever seen him do before.
No, and it carried all the way out of the box.
Yeah. It was like a different keeper.
It was good. It was really good.
Like a different keeper. I don't get it. We've discussed this before. You know, I've never conceded that he's actually better than. Because we've got, as Dar said earlier, we've got 3 years of history. This is a big sample over 3 years. He's been fairly dire or below average, considering he's been below average with freakish, terrible errors.
If he goes all the way up to Christmas, Si, like this, then we might just see the signs of a new keeper, really, at Liverpool. Then, do you at that point, okay, Rhodesy, let's go to you with this. Do you then give some credit to Akterberg finally?
Outliers happen. It did.
Outliers happen.
I think, why now after 3 years?
I think Akterberg completed his FIFA Pro, didn't end recently, wasn't it last season? So maybe he's learning as well. Maybe he's reacting to Klopp better. I don't know. But Mignolet certainly is. And it's not just the saves, like Si's mentioned, that have saved us points, but it's the all
carries.
Looks like a really good keeper. And I never thought I'd been looking at him and looking at others and going, he's performing as good as any other keeper at the moment in the division. So you've got to give him credit when he's doing it.
In the division.
Can he, like Greg says, can he keep it up till Christmas? Can he have a full season of it? That's the next level that he's got to get to.
Yeah, I think he earns his spot, though, for next year, just on the last few months, which is crazy, really. From, we were calling him a calamity and, you know, all these things and, oh, the catalyst of doom, I was calling him, Darth, at one point. So, you know, I mean, it was, he can't kick, can't do nothing. I mean, he had one bad kick yesterday. Let's point it out. Let's be objective. But his kicking's got a little bit better as well. The only thing I think that's left from him is to try and start, breakaways, you know, the counterattacks. If he can get that going in his game now, that would then make him pretty decent. I think that's what one thing he's missing is distributing fast. He's still quite slow at distributing.
Yeah, but it's so
perfection.
Yeah, I'm still not asked with keeper distribution, to be honest, because it's the most important thing is not making mistakes. I'd say 95% of the keeper's job is not making mistakes and keeping the ball out of the net. Maybe even 99%. That's my view. It's
fair.
Huge.
Yeah, definitely.
Just do the basics right, and then
we can't ask for too much, I suppose.
the last 10 games, even Gigi Buffon, you know, he's got minor flaws, and he's the greatest of all time. So the last 10 games, save percentage is actually 72%, which is really high. Well, considering what Mignolet's managed in his Liverpool career to date, he's typically been more like mid-60s, 65, 66% overall. So
on a good day. Yeah. For a season, it was like 55 to 50 to 60, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. So, yes, he's over 70% in the last 10 games. So I would say that it's a toss-up. Since the start of February, the best player is a toss-up between Mignolet and Emre Can.
Yeah, definitely.
I'd agree with that.
Coutinho's been decent as well.
In the last run-in, Coutinho's been...
Yeah, in April and May, not in March, February and March.
Let's talk about Coutinho then, actually. Some numbers on Coutinho. There was some, the most touches in the game again for Phil in this central midfield role. Darth, if we go by a really small sample size of two games, he's run the show.
111 passes received in this match. And if you look at StatZone, it's so progressive. Everybody's giving him the ball, and everything is. If you look at all the arrows into Coutinho, they're all forward. So no matter where he's getting it from, if the players aren't passing back to him, they are passing slightly forward or sideways to him, and he's getting it in and around centre circle, both sides of the pitch. And it's a thing of beauty, really, is to see a player that involved, and basically he's our best player, getting him that involved. It's what we always, I think it's basically what we wanted to see, isn't it, Sy, going forward?
Yeah, 100%. Do you know, right, for context, because there's lots of talk of how good Mane has been and how good Phil has been, right? Phil leads the team in, per 90, Phil leads the team in passes, final third passes, passes into the box, chances created, big chances created. He's second in assists by 0.01 to Ronaldo. Successful dribbles. He's got the second most shots per 90. He is fourth in big chances. He's second in big chances missed. So he's got the second best conversion of big chances, and he is top for goals per 90 as well. He's phenomenal. That's all of the categories. He's the best at all of the categories.
Would you disagree with that then, that he's inconsistent?
He's the best at all of the categories.
No, he's inconsistent insofar as he had an injury and he took a long time to get back up to speed. I don't know if that's inconsistent or not.
Yeah. But he was so good apart from that. And still, even then, he was still, while he was coming back up to speed, he was the only lad scoring.
There was something that Sy said about Sturridge, which was really, really, I thought was really interesting way of looking at it, very sports sciencey way, that he said that Sturridge comes back when he's ready. Maybe said he takes, somebody said he takes so long to come back. And Sy said, maybe he only comes back when he's ready. Maybe Phil was nowhere near ready and he just tried to force it. Maybe he shouldn't have come back for another month.
Maybe he didn't force it, and I think Studge has that thing about him now where he takes his time because of all the injuries he's had. Maybe with Phil it's more like, yeah, you'll be all right, get in there, we need you because Mane's not here, because that's what was happening really back in Jan.
Yeah, but he was forced to play maybe out of duty. And Studge has done that a long time and ended up having to have hip surgery, major hip surgery. So he's probably not so willing to do that. And maybe just because of the injuries, he knows his body well.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, Coutinho in this match, 7 out of 7 dribbles. Amazing. I mean, we were talking about this last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
And we did the video after the account, and basically pretty much all the stuff
that we talked about,
all those ones went up again. So I guess I'm going to keep this on as a tracker now. So we got 1,254 minutes in centre midfield. His non-penalty goals per 90 minutes played is now at 0.5, which is absolutely insane. That's better than Harry Kane, pretty much.
It's 0.49 Harry Kane.
Yeah. 3.2 shots, and now he's gone up to 3.2 shots. 2.4 chances created, gone down a smidgen. 4.3 take-ons at 67% now from centre midfield. Unbelievable. Unbelievable numbers. And 2.9 tackles.
You can't carry Lees on. Especially
But why?
Listen, you're talking.
He's done this against the best teams in the league.
Has any central midfielder ever posted those numbers?
I think football's in a transition.
I know, but I'm just saying, has there ever been a central midfielder who's...
Right.
I don't think he's a central midfielder.
Because the best thing about it is it's the roundness of his game, the roundness of that contribution. It's all of it. He's doing it all.
Yeah.
But you know, 10 years ago, right, there was... Has a winger ever scored this many goals? That was the conversation at the time, yeah? And maybe we're making an evolution in football again now, and maybe Phil's going to be the start of it. But maybe Phil's not the start of it. Silva and De Bruyne moving into midfield, they're the start of it, and Phil's taking that on an extra evolutionary step.
Well, particularly De Bruyne, because De Bruyne was playing, Guardiola played him in the midfield three quite a bit, didn't he, this season?
Yeah, and Silva. De Bruyne and Silva.
Yeah.
Putting De Bruyne and Silva in centre midfield, that's insane. Apart from, it's brilliant.
Yeah, I know what you mean, though. It's like two attacking midfielders, you know, number 10s or whatever, you know. Normally
it is when you've got Fernandinho behind them as well.
True. They've got a really good player right behind him. I mean, but did you guys notice as well with Phil, though? It looked like he just took the game by the scruff of the neck. Like, there was a big confidence. There was an aura. I don't know. It just felt like, you know what, boys? I've got this today. I just felt like watching that game, he just went, just give it to me. I'll sort it, lads. Just give it to me.
Do you not think that there's a wonderful thing when 11 players are on the pitch that want the ball and the opposition are kind of worried about?
Yeah, of course.
It makes life so much easier for your team, and I don't think we've had that for a while.
Yeah. How many touches did you say that Lucas got against Southampton? Was it like something like 120?
124, I think.
And then Coutinho got basically the same amount against...
132.
Borough. And 111 passes received. Mm-hmm. So who would you rather have on the ball 120
exactly,
times in a match?
Exactly.
And we've had Lovren over 100 touches in some games. Matip, Lovren.
He's nearly 100 touches Milner. Yesterday. Lovren.
Milner,
yeah, 110 touches Matip, one time.
But interestingly, if we look at the tactics, we talked about this in the WhatsApp group, but we have this tactical flow from basically right back to left back. Left back across into centre midfield, then across towards the right wing to Lallana and Mane. That's traditionally how we've played all season. And we've even played the same flow when Lallana and Mane haven't played. And that's kind of why we've come unstuck. It's just been a dead end and ends up going back to centre back. This time, it was much more of an even spray chart of possession. Lovren and Matic were playing to each other. It wasn't just going one way. And then the ball's been played to Klein equally as to Milner and actually equally into Chan and Coutinho. So we were attacking them. They had a lot more concerns of where on the pitch we were going to be attacking them from rather than closing down one alleyway, which is how when we become predictable, yeah, it's going to come from the same
place. I think your point earlier about Sturridge dragging them deeper, I think that's one of the big things. I think if you have a striker on the pitch, that's going to frighten the opposition defence. Really worried about, you know, if we give this guy some space, he's going to punish us. We just haven't had it, you know, this season. I mean, I know Firmino and all that striker, but that's a different kettle of fish to having a renowned striker,
I don't know if it's a mental thing, right? But if you just watch, if you forget the ball and just watch Studge in the game, it's easy when you're in the stadium. But he's just a different type of striker. There was when he was great and everyone was talking about him and he was quoting the videos that he would watch of goals of Inzaghi, and he was and there was this conversation with Ancelotti and how, you know, he guided him into what type of footballer to be and all that stuff, and he was learning. And he talked about Inzaghi and how, because naturally he wants to come deep and get involved in the game. And Ancelotti was like, no, go and stand up there. And he was doing exactly that stuff that Inzaghi does. What he does is that he gets in the peripheral vision of the centre-back, just behind the centre-back. Centre-back's trying to push out. And so he gets in the peripheral vision, which makes the centre-back turn. And then he gets a little bit concerned about where he's going to be. And then he was dropping deep. He was dropping to catch it instead of being a proactive defense, which is in control of where the striker is going to be. He undermines that, and then he just on his own controls the depth and the position of the whole back four. Really, just by being a smart striker.
Really interesting. Really interesting.
And it's got nothing to do with his speed.
No, not at all.
And the timing of when he moved.
Coutinho thing. If you look at the position and pass map from 11T Gen, the size of Coutinho's circle is equivalent to the whole of the Middlesbrough team added together. If you look at the size of
that's
his contribution on the ball, and I don't think I've seen a bigger one this season. Maybe Milner in a couple of games against Burnley or something. But yeah,
well, Coutinho's will be further forward. It'll be pretty much on the halfway on the centre circle, won't it?
Yeah.
No, it was further than that. It was further than that. It was
a little bit slightly left. Well, no, it's the centre of our team, though, yeah?
We're talking Milner. It was the deepest average position of the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
Milner didn't cross the halfway line, basically, which is weird because only one Middlesbrough player did. He had the lowest distance covered of the season as well. And I think it's only the second time that Klein has outrun him.
Can we quickly talk about Lallana before we go into some more on-ball stats? Sorry, and the goal. We need to cover the other two goals as well. Darth, what did you think of Lallana yesterday? Because I've got a few points on him from watching the game back second time.
I didn't notice him too much, to be honest, of all the players. Okay. Of all the players. I thought he was all right. Yeah. I have no real opinion on this game, to be honest, Kex.
Okay, well, what I noticed was, you know, when we talk, and Rhodesy, you'll probably appreciate this. We talk about the opportunities and creating that... the hockey assist, but not as an assist, as a shot assist or a opportunity assist. Yeah. I noticed that, and I'm not a massive fan of Adam, by the way, but when I was watching it yesterday, I noticed that he was doing a lot of the one touch football outside to get someone in, like a Milner or a Coutinho, or he was linking just sitting outside the box and just one touch. And there was one little lovely back heel to Firmino at one point as well in the second half. That was just beautiful. But he was doing a lot of it. So when I watched it back, I was just like, you know what? I didn't notice this before the first time round. I was actually thought you had a rubbish game, mate. But I have to say that watching it second time round, there was... And that's the thing. These numbers. We won't ever get a number on that, will we, Rhodesy? Like, the bits where the pass comes in, the player runs into the box, he's put it in. I suppose passes into the box, maybe.
I think some of the tracking stuff that Dan talked about with... is it Power on that analytic podcast, Dan? Was it Paul?
Paul Power.
Yeah. That could take you into those kind of dimensions, so you could maybe start putting numbers on it. But I thought it was okay watching it linking up. I thought it took too many touches on occasion, so not quite the same. But I thought that counter-attack was terrible when we were like 6-1.
Oh, when he scored.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. That up. Right, royally. How could you mess up with like a 5-on-1?
Yeah, it was a poor pass. I know what you mean, what you're saying. I think deeper, he does take a lot more touches. And it was just when he was on the edge of the box and he can just play it off, he was linking it. Well, sorry, that I should...
He has got a lovely touch on the ball, as we've said many a time. And I did show some... I did clap a few times at some Lallana touches, definitely, yesterday. But I also was frustrated with some of them. So.
Would you...
It was a mixed bag from Adam.
He's a weird guy because he's phenomenally gifted technically. And we used to bang on about this a year and a half ago, about him making bad choices or making not making reactive choices rather than proactive choices. And whenever he plays that far forward, he feels like he does it again. When the light's on him to be the main guy as number 10, I don't know if he embraces it in the same way. But yesterday, 9 touches in the box. He had the most touches in the box of anyone in the team. But he didn't. He only played 6 passes into the box. Phil had 12.
Wow.
Yeah, big deal. 12. I think 12 is the most this season as well. I didn't.
six is very good, isn't it?
Yeah, but 12 is phenomenal. Jesus yeah. Christ, that's pretty cool. That is really good.
We've had games this season without 12
in a whole game. Yes, yeah, of course. Yeah. Where they've just defended. Rhodesy, anything else on board from yourself?
Yeah, the expected goals a little bit different from what I thought it'd be. I thought we were a bit more dominant, but 2.1 to about 1 is the average. I didn't. Two big chances each as well. What were Middlesbrough's big chances? The one that
there were two. There were 2 1-on-1s in the second half. There was 2. He had another one after that as well.
Both from errors.
Yeah, both from errors. One was the one where Lovren stepped out and did a jiggy, and then the other one was where Matip, Lovren was actually with the defender, and Matip and Klein left a really big gap in between each other, and I think it was that Forshaw again ran through.
Lovren doing a jiggy is the new brain fart for next
it is, he was doing a jiggy. It's that little foot movement, we have to call it the jiggy, man. You're getting jiggy with it. Na 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 na. The whole fan, the support goes na 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 na, don't do it. Right, anyway. Right, we'll move on. Darth, anything from you on ball?
No, just wanted to call up to again. Phil's dribble, 7 out of 7. Just absolutely staggering.
No worries. I think
No one in world football does that from centre midfield. No one.
This is what I'm saying. He has it all. If we can keep hold of him, some of his quotes to ESPN last night were really good, saying that, you know, I think he's kind of regurgitating the stuff that Klopp said, that I could go to Barcelona and Real, but I'll be a small fish, you know, in a big pond. But here, if I smash it, they'll make a statue of me one day. So I like that reason. I was like, okay, son, do it. Prove it. We'll make a statue of you if you want to be that good. Become a legend. But, Si, you've got quite a lot of notes in your spreadsheet. So if there's anything else you want to talk about?
No, the shots. We had a lot of shots. There's 6 highest of the season. But the other thing is the thing we've talked about a lot, the thing I bang on about a lot that I think is a big advantage to us is the dribble carries into the box, basically. And we average 3.86 carries into the box when Mane starts and 2.1 carries into the box when he doesn't, which is huge. And maybe that's one of the – we talked about it last week, I think the week before, one of the factors that Mane brings –
I'm sure Damien Comolli talked about carries into the box or dribbles into the box as a key stat at one point.
Makes sense.
I know it was some of the recoveries in the final third and things, but I'm sure carries into the box is a huge thing.
So 3.86 for dribbles for Mane, not for Mane, but for us when Mane's playing. 2.1 without, unless Studge is playing. In games that Mane isn't, but Studge is, 4.98.
There you go.
I'm not saying this is Studge at all, but I think probably the we're more attacking when he's there, so there are more players. I don't know. It's a small sample, but I like the sample.
I would love it. Can I, Darth? I want to speak to you about the second goal, because the free kick. Did you notice the little? I think it was rehearsed, because did you see what 2 players in the wall from our own team did?
No.
They ducked. Yeah,
Matip, who was it? The duck? It was definitely
Emre Can.
Over the heads. Matip. Oh, not
they,
over the heads.
They both
straight
ducked.
Guess, wasn't it?
They both
right,
ducked.
You've watched it back, obviously. I've only got the original view in the match yet. But was every single Middlesbrough player in the wall?
I don't think everybody was. The few on the left and right, they were not everybody
close.
Was in the wall.
It did look like a Middlesbrough wall.
Yeah, there was no. I don't think there was anybody in the box.
I seem to recall first time round that I thought everybody was in the wall, and I thought that's just too many. Yes, and you know, in the end, Guzan didn't even see it, did he?
Nope, he didn't see it.
Chanomatic were literally the middle of the wall. It was weird. They didn't put anybody behind them or in front of them, which is what they should be doing.
I would have been livid if we conceded that free kick.
Yeah, it was not a great free kick.
It was right into the side netting though. Like, as in, when it bounced, it went into the side net. It wasn't, like, in the centre of the goal or anything.
But if it goes in the side netting and it's from that position, if it was left-footed and it curled around and then back to the side netting...
Of course, the curl's the other way, yes.
It was, but at various points, it would have been really easy to say from the goalie's perspective, because it was quite close to the goalie. It curled away from the goalie, didn't it?
He took a step to the left, though, as well, which killed him, the keeper. He took a step to the left. And I think
the
that's
time warp, Kex.
Pardon?
The time warp.
and then a step to the right.
Let's do it. But I just thought it was dead. I thought it was dead clever. I really did, because we definitely planned it. Because even Studge was running in behind the wall, and even he ducked. All three of them at the same time ducked. Matip, Jan, and Studge. And I just thought, you clever little shits. And I love it when you do something that's planned and it comes off on a set piece, because we're not known for that. And yes, beautiful.
So more dribbles around the box, though. It wasn't in the box, but it was around the box, isn't that won us the free kick?
Yes, it was. It was Studge, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Studge won us a free kick as well. Okay. Well, I think Rosie, you covered the third goal with the silly pass from Lallana, which didn't quite get to where it was supposed to, and then nice little assist from Gini for Lallana to tap it in. His first goal this year in 2017 for Liverpool.
Did
I not say it was due?
You did. Darth, do you want to do some off? Do you want to go through some of the off ball?
We had this unprecedented situation of having to do it under pressure the day after the game. So there's been no off-ball analysis by me, I'm afraid, today. I'm slacking. I'm providing shit service. Sorry, guys.
No, don't be silly. It's totally fine. There's no papa, but we can just talk about how there was not much pressing at all. It was like the fifth or sixth lowest of the season. Emre Can was just a total beast. 22, that's like 28% of the total was just Emre Can.
And we had 80% of possession.
Yes, exactly.
In the first half as well. It
so
was just nuts.
There was no pressing to be done. Wijnaldum was second. I think if you want a reason to why Can was pressing,
we'll do
so
some
much,
highlights from the encounter later in the week.
We'll
do a retrospective Papa chat.
Yeah, but pretty much Can, every time he pressed, it was on a counter. So when they were countering, they were going straight through the centre, and Can was right there to press most of the time. So a lot of those presses, I'd say at least half of them were coming when they were coming straight at him. So, yeah. That's what I would put down, why his numbers were highly inflated. He was the shield. It worked for once.
Yeah, the only thing we wanted to talk about, the other thing on the agenda, was the part two of the Wijnaldum paradox.
Indeed. And we tweeted out an image today as well.
Yeah. So a month ago, Si did this mind-boggling stat about Ginny's touches versus the top six, and he has something like 30% more touches against the top six than he does against the bottom 14, which is completely counterintuitive. And I went away and looked today after his goal at his goal scoring record home and away this season and last season with Newcastle, and he's played over 3,000 minutes pretty much, because he's had two full seasons pretty much in the Premier League. Over 3,000 minutes at home, over 3,000 minutes away, and he's had almost twice as many shots at home as he has at away, 75 to 39, 2.1 shots per game at home, 1.1 away. But if you look at the chance quality, he's had 16 big chances in home games, scoring 11, and he's only had one away from home. So not only is we all know the stat that Ginny hasn't scored a goal away from home in the league, but he's not even getting any big chances. Zero. He's had one big chance in two seasons away from home. It's nuts. But at home, 16 goals in total, 11 out of 16. So he's got 11 of them being big chances, and a 21% conversion rate. Non-penalty goals per 90 minutes is 0.45. And for a centre midfielder like Wijnaldum, that is outstanding. Even if it's only home games, it's outstanding. You know, you're lucky to get more than one in five for a centre midfielder.
Yeah, note, he wasn't playing all of his games centre mid for Newcastle. He was an attacking mid.
No, to be fair, he was more often in the three, wasn't he? To be fair, yes. Yeah. But, I mean, he scored eight goals last and eight goals this, isn't it? Or is it 9-7?
It's six this for us, five or six for us, and more for them.
Right,
yeah, more for them. Yeah.
Okay, then, fair enough, then. I'll take it all back. But the thing is the chance. So there has to be tactical, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's got to be. But
Devil's advocate.
Go on.
But at Newcastle, he was a forward.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I said, yeah.
But so how can it be tactical if it's a forward and he's not getting the box?
In a relegated side.
How can you only have one big chance in two seasons away from home?
Just weird.
Yeah, that's an unexplained, like, X-Files type thing, man.
It was, do you know, this is the highest number of touches he had against a team not in the top six. Not in the top seven, actually, because his most was actually against Everton.
I just don't think we can explain it without going and watching every single away game. And just
it's an absolute joy to watch when you're at the stadium, though. His movement and his body position and touch. It just makes it look so easy. It really is just a joy.
He beefed up as well. Once he scored the goal, he was really confident straight after that. He was so good after that. You could see the difference. I think the whole team settled anyway. Right, before we go, guys, is that everything, Darth, on Ginny?
Yep.
Okay, before we go, just really quickly then, before you go, round the table, short chat about the season as a whole. Si, what do you think? How do you think it went then in the end?
Ended up where it should.
Yep, achieved. Achieved their goal.
Literally, this is where the stuff that I always hate, the par, bollocks, this is it. We've got the third highest, I think we've got the third highest salary structure in the league. Fourth is, I don't care about net spend, but Paul's put lots of data out about salary, the link of salaries against the league position. If we'd have finished below fourth, it would have been a failure. Let's just say, we did okay. If we'd have reversed the form from the end to the beginning, we'd be much happier. But let's move on to the next season. Well done, boys. We Champions League stuff, yeah.
Okay. Darth, any difference to Si's opinion?
No, I was saying from about late September, early October, I thought third was possible. So I was a bit disappointed in the end not to get third. But yeah, it was good. I think 76 76 points is, I always look at points rather than places, because I think it's more consistent from season to season as a predictor. But I think progress. But 76 points is excellent. We've only bettered it five times in the Premier League, or four times. This might be the joint fifth best with a Rafa season. Houllier bettered it twice, and Benitez twice, and Rodgers once.
Yeah.
So it's really good. People think this is like shelling peas. It's not. We don't do this kind of thing very often. So
Rhodes,
yeah. What was your prediction, Dan? You give a points range, didn't you?
At the start of the season.
Mm.
Oh, I can't remember. I think we should. It might have been 70 to 73, something like that. Maybe. Yeah,
I think it was.
We ended up with 2 points more than Klopp's lifetime average.
Yeah. Could I ask? But you all. Just for your marks out of 10 for the season for Klopp as a manager, how many would you give Klopp for the season?
Oh my God, that is a tough one. I'd probably go 7.5.
Yeah, I'd go 8. I think I had us down as having the 6th best squad.
I think 7.5 would be fair. What about you, Si?
I think if you give points on how many points they added as a manager to that squad, if you'd have put, listen, in America, we have replacement level players in sports. So if any other average manager, what would they got from that same team? I think if Klopp at his best, probably adds 15 points. I think he probably added about 7.
So what would you give? What would you give out of 10?
Seven. Less than you guys.
Okay. Right.
Just on the points totals, I think Arsenal's is incredible to not finish in the top four.
Yeah.
Isn't it the first time since 38 games this season?
Yeah, it is the highest points total for fifth place team ever. And it, to be honest, it did defy a lot of the analytical models, which were saying that I think there was a 60% chance of either 73 or 74 being the final score, the final tally for fourth. So yeah, not many were saying that 75 points was that likely.
But like
maybe a 10-15% chance for 75.
Look at the points below seventh though, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
The league is absolutely shite. So the top seven can run away with all the record point scores because nobody else gets any points. The eighth best team finished with 44 points.
Yeah.
That's the worst league in history.
Yeah, it's 8th to 11th collapse this year. If you look at the totals for 12th to 20th compared to previous years, they're about normal. It's 8th to 11th. It's just fallen off a cliff this year.
Which is why I can't give Klopp more than 7, because we were so bad against them.
That's true, actually. Yeah, I did a tweet out early on for my account, my own account, and I gave him 7.5.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that. Okay. I just think the goal, I know there's been a topsy-turvy thing going on, but achieved what he wanted to from the start. I'm not calling it a success because I think success is trophies. So I just think that he got what he needed to right now. Okay? So there you go. You can, if you disagree with us, you can tweet us and at AI under pressure, and we're all on that one. So you can tell us if you think we were wrong. 7, 7.5, 7.5, and an 8. But I think that's it for this season in terms of AI under pressure. That's match analysis pods. We will continue over the summer, and we'll be back. Thank you so much for all your hard work, Si, Dan, and Dan. It's been a pleasure, and this is the first real full year of Anfield Under Pressure. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed being a part of this. I know it's hard work, but I really, really appreciate it. It's been, I've learned a lot, and I think a lot of listeners have learned a lot as well. So thank you so much, guys. It's been brilliant. You've been brilliant.
Awesome. Cheers, boss. Can I just say we failed our 45-minute challenge miserably.
Right. Thank you, Darth. Thank you, Devil.
You're welcome.
And thank you,
Dan. I'm off to lie down.
Right. We'll chat soon. Bye.
Network.